Okay, it is Sunday, a day I usually don't record on, but this is the Counselor Connection. I'm your host, Fabian Bix. And on this podcast, we're going to be discussing the administrative conference, the annual administrative conference you have with your principal about your goals for the year and budgets and that type of stuff. We also have an interview from Matthew Bowerman. We had a week or two ago with him from Maryland. We're going to talk about their role with counselors as far as collaborating and work with students to make sure they're successful academically, social, emotionally, and being career and college ready. And of course, my final thoughts will be coming up later on. I'll give you that when we get to it. But this is the part of the show I say, let's go. So you're looking at improving your program, trying to get buy-in for your principal. That's where the annual administrative conference come in. It's formerly called the Counselor Administrative Agreement. That changed over a couple years ago with the new ASCA model. That changed 2 years ago when they changed over to the fourth edition in 2019. They pushed that out during ASCA's conference that year. And the purpose of the annual administrative conference is to collaborate with your principal as far as the goals of your building, as far as make sure it's tied into this continuous improvement plan, and to help your counselor department grow and you grow as a counselor. So we are going to go ahead and look at the first part of this document and go through the different pieces of it, and we're going to do a second segment on the second half and how does the principal tie into all of this. So let's look at the very first part of the document. At the top, it gives the data summary. They ASCA used to have a data sheet where you fill in different parts of it as far as your demographics for the last 3 years, promotion, retention, grades, failure rate, demographics of the school, so forth and so on. I believe that is not required anymore, but I would still do it so that way you have a gauge of what your school has looked like the last three years, so you can have a running total and see any trends from that way, so you can see if there's anything that can be done as far as improvement from the counselor department as far as different changes you can implement in your program. So in the first part of the document, it says in the data summary you found these data priorities, and after finding the priorities, you create your outcome goals, which should be in a SMART goal form. And everybody, we all should know what a SMART goal is. So we'll make sure, let's say I want to do discipline. By the end of May 2022, we will decrease office referrals by 20% from 800 to 740 to 640. 640. So it's measurable, it's attainable, it's time-based, it's realistic. It follows all the criteria in the SMART goal. We want to make sure that's in that format, so that way you have a point of accountability, you have a goal set. Now, I'm not saying that we always going to accomplish these goals. It's just somewhere we could go, and we could always modify as we needed to as far as the steps and interventions we use to get to those goals. We'll talk about that in a later podcast as far as improving goals and as far as interventions to get to those goals. The next part of this document is the school counselor use of time. Now, if you're a first-year counselor, you will not need the previous school year time. Now, if you want to put your internship hours on there, you can. That's an option. But you want to make sure that you're realistic in your time. You should, especially a first-year counselor, you should learn your culture and climate, your building, this type of services that are needed in your building. My previous building I was at, my sister principal was a counselor for years. And he knew that the building that we were at needed wraparound services and a lot of collaborating with social worker and teachers and parents So those services would need to be focused on around, close to 40 to 55%. It's great to have direct student services, but sometimes we're not going to get 20%. Maybe we need to cut it down to 12 or 13, and then put the indirect services as far as parent meetings, collaborating, consultation, put that at about 55%. So right there, you should hit about 60 to 70%. Now the Go-Asker's goal is 80% for direct, for all student contact with direct or indirect, and 20 for program management and fair share responsibility. Now also, your building might be different from some buildings where, for my district I'm at now, we do not do 504s or MTSS slash RTI. Some districts where the council might have to do both. Some buildings the council might have to do one or the other. Some buildings the council might have to be a test administrator. So of course those three duties are non-school counseling tasks, so it's gonna be a little bit more difficult to do your comprehensive plan. But this is a document that can advocate for your time. In my previous building, I showed my principal at the end of the school year, I had close to almost 35% of non-school counseling tasks, especially in April when we had our milestones. So for myself, I was taking off those duties as a somebody help with coordinating the milestones. Only problem was they moved that to the other counselor that came, the new counselor that came to replace my counselor that was there that year who was retiring. So it got off my plate because I just showed the data. I didn't say don't take it off my plate, but it was a tool to show that I could be used in a different area, but you placed another person on there, which could go to the principal seeing that maybe for milestones, either use my administrators to set this up. I have one person that's over in charge of testing. Maybe have some volunteers as far as this area or this area. But an ideal person to be a co-coordinator or somebody that helps out with that would be somebody that's in special education because of the accommodations. They can help with as far as inputting accommodation into the platform, or, just that smaller detail consists that they are more knowledgeable of that area than what we are right now. Another section of the form talks about caseload and ratio. Of course, ASCA asks for 1 to 250, one counselor per 250 students. I can say in my previous building, it was at 280. So that's not bad. School I'm at now, I'm at 1 at 393. So it's just the demographics of the building. It'd be great to have an extra person. This is where advocating for an intern in your building. If you're a counselor that's a rising star or somebody that's very experienced in the field, this would be a great time for you to advocate for an intern to help out as far as different things as far as your caseload. You can advocate for an intern for a year, or get two different interns each semester and have them work on different parts of the your counseling program. This would be another great area also to discuss how caseloads are divided among counselors. If you're a singleton in your building, of course you'll be the only one there. If you're a high school, I've seen high schools that go by grade level. I've seen high schools, preferably especially in Henry County, they go by alphabet with your last name. So that way you could follow those students on a 4-year plan. So that way you could build that relationship with that student and their parents to make sure that you get what that student needs for their 4-year plan and make sure they reach their goals as far as college applications or military or trade school or, tech school or whatever their goal that might have as far as what they want to do after high school. Going back to the caseloads, before the year start, you should have that worked out with your co-counselor as far as what grade levels you should work with or you want to work with. Just depending on the experience that you have and experience. Now, if you're an elementary counselor coming to a middle school, the natural progression will be sixth grade because they're transitioning to middle school. If you come from middle to high school, if it's alphabetics, then you might need to bone up on PSAT and SAT requirements FAFSA, especially if you're going by last names or you're following students all 4 years. If you've got a specific grade level, of course, if you come from middle school to high school, maybe ninth grade might be a great fit. It just depends on the needs of that building and what's comfortable for all the counselors in that building. The last section on this administrative agreement that we're working on now that we're going to discuss in part one is the program implementation plan. This is where you talk about your annual calendar, closing the gap plan, and your classroom and group mindsets and behaviors action plan. Now, the mindset and behavior action plan, these are with that goes along with the classroom plan. You tie the standards of the mindset behavior given by ASCA into your lessons or small groups that you're going to tackle for the year. How you're going to tackle it's going to be individual, it's going to be small group, it's going to be a large group or a classroom lesson, or possibly a grade level. You could talk about social skills, and you're going to do that with 8th grade. You could talk about time management with 6th grade. You could talk about conflict resolution with 8th grade or conflict resolution with all 3 grade levels and use different standards tacked onto it. Now, some of these mindset behavior can be crossed over with different lessons. So you want to try to make sure you hit a couple of them. You're not going to hit all of them. Ideally, you should, but you want to try to make sure that you tackle, you know, important ones and tie those standards into it. Track the data as far as you're doing a behavior goal, you got conflict resolution. You can see how you reduce the number of fighting or physical contact with students by 15%. You could use, well, I talked about conflict resolution with students, and it went down by 12%. You did get a decrease, but you want to look at different ways to get that up 3% possibly. Your annual calendar, you talk about what you're going to do for the year. Some of the things are going to be non-negotiables, what you're going to do as far as bridge bill laws for Georgia, crossing over ceremonies, high school transition, middle school transition for elementary school. You look at, of course, your core curriculum, advisory council, so forth and so on. So those things should be documented inside of your plan. Some things going to be ongoing, like check-in, check-out with students or collaboration with parents, that thing or not. Finally, closing the gap action plan, how you're going to plan to close those gaps, what lesson you're going to use, and what data points you're going to use to try to track those things. Of course, these 3 documents that I've stated on here will be part of the RAMP application, so get familiar with those documents so that way you can tie it into your plan so you get more buy-in for your principal to collaborate and make sure that you're trying to get students successful for that year. We're going to be right back with part 2. We're going to be discussing the advisory council and the other parts of this document. Keep it locked. All right, this is the second part of the annual administrative conference document. Now we're getting into some easy stuff to me, but it can be difficult at the same time if you don't have full buy-in. Advisory council, that is a panel of people that are stakeholders to the building and to the council department. And of course, you have 2 meetings a year, 1 in the fall, 1 in the spring. This is where you give your goals from the previous year and where you landed at, and your goals for the current year, where you want to be and how you want to improve it. People that should be on your advisory council, first person I'm gonna start with is a board member. The reason why you need to have a board member there, if you're attempting to go RAMP, they need to be at both meetings, so that way you'll have buy-in from a district level. The next person that should be on there, of course, is an administrator, preferably the principal, but it'd be great if you have an assistant principal at the meeting. You can rotate them out, but as long as they receive the documents and they sign off on it, you should be covered as far as that those points on your RAMP application. Another set of stakeholders you should have different teachers from different demographics in your building. You can have a gen ed teacher, a gifted teacher, a special education teacher. That way you're representing each level of students' needs as far as from the faculty side. Of course, you want to have students on there because students are the ones that are hopefully being positively influenced by your plan, and of course the council department and a parent. Now, one way you can double up those people that are on the advisory council. You can have a parent that's also an employee in the building. You can have or a teacher that's also a parent, but you can have your child as a person on the team. That way you know you have buy-in from those students. Now, if you got an 8th grader in there, of course they won't be on the panel next year. So you might want to groom somebody, have somebody that's in the 6th grade or 7th grade, and follow that track each year, and then you just recruit different students. That could be a form of community service for those kids as well, especially if they're on Beta Club. That could be a representation of a part of the student body as well, as far as Beta Club or athletes, scholar athletes, or you could have somebody that's in the GSA, Gay Straight Alliance, so forth and so on. So that way you get a different dynamic of the student body in your building. Another part of it is the professional development plan. What roles are you, or events are you going to build your craft? I've said on previous podcasts, apply to present, participate in your state association, get on your leadership team. I've been on GSAA's leadership team. This is my third year. This year, next 2 years, I'm going to be over podcasting. Like previous 2 years, I was the Beacon editor. That was a very insightful way of seeing, getting buy-in from other counselors to try to put an arc out for their best practices. Go to different conferences. You might present somewhere within the district. You might do professional development in your building. Those are different areas where you can show off your talents and your wherewithal for as building your counseling professionalism. Different things. Those are a couple of different things that you can do as far as professional development. Of course, the two of the final sections right here, budgets and supplies. Some schools have a budget for the counseling department. Some do not. Some things you might have to do as far as use locker sales possibly, or you know, jeans day for students if you wear uniforms. You could do a hat day. There are several different things that you could do to build your funding for your building. You can also apply for grants. You can look at some funding might be allocated towards your department. Maybe if you're a Title I school, there's some things that can be allocated towards you as far as that, but Title I is very strict as far as what funding can be used. So some of those things, as far as Title I is for supplies, you're a part of that funding, so you could get things ordered for yourself as far as printer paper or printer. If you need an extra monitor in your office, those are for educational improvement. So those are areas you can look at as far as getting a budget or trying to find a way to be creative and getting a budget. It's asking what your hours in your office are going to be for parents, teachers, and students. My building, where 4 o'clock is the drop dead time for me, 8 to 4. Of course, we get a report or something. Of course, we'll do what we got to do. But the optimal hours are from 8 to 4. I put 8 to 4 in mine, even though our hours are 8:15 to 4:15. But I put 8 o'clock for mine, it's just in case the parents are early and they have to be working 8:45. I'll make sure I make myself available for the parent, because the most important thing is make sure we're available for our stakeholders when they need us. Of course, the final part of the document is the different volunteers or different roles and responsibility of staff members in the building. Now, this part is the most important one. The reason why is because you might not have an attendance clerk in your building, but you might have somebody that can run reports. You might have a data clerk in your building, but you might not have a data clerk, and you're a person that can run those reports. Ideally, counselors should not be entering different data into any different platform. But sometimes you have to, because that's just the makeup of your building. My previous building where I was at, I was a PBIS coach, but I also entered the data in because I trusted me doing it, because I could not trust nobody else doing it. And I didn't want to get, I was one thing about me, my data was up to date in Swiss. So that's one thing I can guarantee, that if I was doing the data, it was in there. But the problem was, though, with doing that, that took away from either my time at home, or I was using some time in the building to enter it so that way it could get done. But the greatest thing that could happen was when Swiss was integrated into Infinite Campus, so that way everything pushed over and I didn't have to worry about it. You might have a college career assistant, which some schools do up north, what I've noticed. They have that role. Might have a college career counselor in their building. So that'd be a pretty cool role to have. Of course, attendance clerk, you had to have a certain amount of enrollment for that to happen. They should be able to run all reports for attendance. That way, you won't have to run them or try to find them or hunt them down and disaggregate that data. All you should be able to do is disaggregate that data. Excuse me. You shouldn't have to run those reports. Now, if you know how to do it and do it frequently and comfortably, you should go ahead and keep doing it. Different volunteers you might have in the building. Of course, interns that fall under there. Registrar, our my building has we have a council secretary. She's our registrar, and she's wonderful. So she helps out with a lot of things as far as taking care of registration, withdrawals, enrollments, so forth and so on. Some schools don't have that luxury of their registrar doing scheduling. Some registrar might just do just enrollment or just grades, and we would have to pull up to pick up the that piece of that and scheduling. Summer starts new scheduling, but that's also that's data. And some of it's a data entry, but when you look at Carnegie credits, that shouldn't fall on the registrar. Some people might look at registrar being a data clerk. Data clerk should be doing scheduling. So there's different interpretations of roles that we could talk about in another podcast. We don't want to get bogged down with it. Now, I have went through the entire document. Now, where does the principal fall in? Principal falls into everything that you do because you have to have the buy-in from him. How does your comprehensive plan and your annual goals affect the school? First thing is making sure that you know what the goals of the school are. And how can the counseling department help improve those goals that the principal and his administrative team put into place to try to improve the status of the school? So if he's looking at your time as far as program planning and non-school counseling tests that he saw from last year, he sees that you have 12% non-school counseling tests and 27% program planning, he might say, I need to pull these duties off of your plate so I can push them to direct student services. Or if you have like 30% direct student services and 35% indirect student services, he might say, I need you to cut down a little bit on direct services and move them to the collaboration piece. Now, it just depends on the makeup of your building. Right now, we're in a pandemic. We're still in a pandemic, so our roles are a little different from previous years, and we're being used in different areas. So you just got to follow the lead on your administrator and make sure that you help fulfill the needs of your building as well. As far as caseload, that should be worked out with your co-counselors before the year and then discuss how this is going to work going forward to the next year. How does that work? How are you going to track your data as far as how you meet students, sign them in, so forth and so on. So your principal might have something to do with that as well. My first year, I was at Apple Middle School. My principal said, as long as nobody has two full grade levels, y'all need to work it out. So I knew that I had to get, I had to split eighth grade with my co-counselor because, you know, she said she still wanted to have a piece of eighth grade. Crazy thing was my office was literally in the eighth grade building. It was a separate building. But she still wanted her time with the students as well as far as eighth grade. So my previous building was two stories and she had bad knees and had hip surgery. Later on that my first year she had to have her other knee replaced. So my first couple years there I had all the students upstairs. Seventh grade was upstairs, so I had all the seventh grade and a top floor in 8th grade, so I had 802 and 7th grade, she had 6th grade and 801. So that's how we worked as far as the case loadout. So those things need to be addressed before the school year. Alright. Now we look at, as far as the plan, as far as, your priorities and advisory council, your principal might be a great resource to find people to add to your advisory council. So I would use him as a resource to help push, put and plug people in the category. Teachers are as well. If you have a teacher that's been on an advisory council for a couple of years, they might say, hey, I want you to add this person. But also, you don't want to spread thin different people. So it'd be great if you could probably rotate some teachers out each year to make sure that they have experience of working with the advisory council. Program implementation, he might tell you things, your calendar, it's like, why don't you move the visit to the high school from January to February? Or you might want to say, I want to do something Red Ribbon Week the whole week. Or I might need to do something with history and tie it into the pedagogy of Georgia Studies as far as Black History Month, how do African Americans affect the Civil War, that type of stuff. There are different ways that they can affect your plan as far as program implementation, as far as your calendar and your improvement plan. Professional development, we always want to get better. He might want to say, I got money to decide for you to attend this conference. So there's different ways that he can advocate for you as well. It's not just something to say, this is what we're supposed to be doing, this is what we're going to do. No, this is a collaboration as far as you both are collaborating on the needs of the building on how to improve the school together. So he might say, there's a conference. I noticed that you haven't had an opportunity to go. We have funding for you to go as far as the registration as well as hotel. So once you, if that's taken care of, there's definitely nothing stopping you. You definitely got buy-in from your principal to improve your program just by professional development. That ties into budgets and supplies. So that way, you'll be able to be more effective as far as getting the supplies you need as far as social-emotional tools or time-tracking analysis tools or various different things that you can use for your program. Now, that is how I look at the annual agreement for counselors. Of course, tweet me at Fave the PSC if you have any other areas that you can see being improved on or things you can do that you have done to get buy-in for your principal as well. Right now, we're going to be right back with our interview with Mr. Bowerman. Keep it locked. All right, welcome back to the Council Connection. I am your host, Damian Vixen. I have a very special guest with me from the great state of Maryland. I have Matthew Bowerman on the line for me. He's an administrator in one of Maryland's great school districts. Mr. Bowerman, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. I'm doing very well. Thank you. How about yourself?
I am doing well, doing well. We're going to go ahead and get this thing started. Just give us a little background about yourself and what brought you into education, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity. I am a school administrator and assistant principal in Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland. I serve the great community of Maryvale Elementary in Rockville, Maryland. This is officially my fifth year as an administrator in Montgomery County. And then I guess I've been about 18 years or so in education. Throughout the rest of Maryland, theater, special education, English, and reading.
One of the questions I want to ask before we get to the school council stuff is just what drove you to education? What made you commit to it, and what made you decide to go into career education?
No, I appreciate that. I think, for me personally, I think it was a calling. I think a lot of the work I've been a part of prior to getting into education was really about service in one form or another. I had an extensive career in the fine and performing arts. And I also worked with a lot of children during that time. I've also been in law enforcement and with the fire department as a medic. And so I guess I've always been really interested in, I guess, giving back in community. Both my parents were in nursing and in law enforcement. And so I guess I just saw that model of service, really wanted to be a part of something like that. And I had some great mentors in my young adulthood, and all that they gave me and poured into me, I kind of wanted to be able to pour back and give back. And so it was really a calling about being a part of something greater than myself, and education seemed like the perfect platform from which to serve and impact, you know, large groups of people in positive ways.
I have a follow-up on your fine arts. What discipline of fine arts were you affiliated with?
I'm a professional actor, singer, dancer. Yeah. I actually still do. Still work in mostly TV film, but TV and film and theater, both nationally and internationally, performing. And then, of course, being a writer as well and working in some other mixed media visual art stuff. But, yep, love the arts.
Okay, and one more follow-up. What is your favorite production then of all time, favorite production to watch or perform in?
Oh, that's a tough one. So one of my favorite plays, not that I was in, one of my favorite plays to see, to read, to watch is August Wilson's Fences. Beautiful piece of theater. Just a beautiful piece. And I think for myself, I think one of my favorite pieces that I was in that I love is Little Shop of Horrors, playing the role of Seymour.
Phoebe Seymour.
There you go. There you go.
Phoebe.
All night long. Yes, yes, yes. Great show. And, yeah, just some a great piece of theater.
That's one thing about educators. Folks don't realize that we have, besides just teaching kids and stuff, we have outside interests that they
don't realize we have. And for me, I still play saxophone. I've been playing saxophone like 34 years.
Nice.
And of course, that's, you know, we all educators, we know we got to find a side hustle and everything. So that's still my hustle to this day. So that's what folks don't realize.
I think that's a really powerful form, which I guess ties into the whole counselor connection, but that really ties into, you know, it's a really powerful form of self-care. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. About being able to anchor yourself, ground yourself in other things that make you whole, especially because, you know, the work we're in, the profession, the calling, you know, the roles and responsibilities we have are such that they can be extremely taxing. And so it's important to be able to have other things to kind of replenish you and fill that cup again.
Yeah, there's no lies told, no lies detected on that. Now, this is the reason why we're here in the podcast. We're not trying to talk about play. I'll talk fine arts with you and everything else, but I think everybody probably get bored with us talking about it. But what is your experience working with school counselors in your time as an educator, as far as a teacher or an administrator right now?
So for me, it's a very specific two words that kind of define it. To be honest with you, it's authentic collaboration. Most of the work I'm embedded in schools now, specifically in administration, in the work I do, which is all around love leading and a focus on developing authentic relationships through a very strong relationship driven social emotional lens, is that none of that work really can happen without some very positive and honest and legitimate connections and conversations between school counselors and administrators. They really work very much in tandem with regards to, you know, the safeguarding of children in the building, with regards to stewarding their social emotional health, with mindfulness and overall wellness concepts, however they're applied from school to school. It's a very interwoven relationship. I know in the past couple of years, my counselor and I We're constantly and consistently involved in everything from, you know, suicide risk assessments together, working with kids, partnering with families, to, you know, various interpersonal dynamics, issues with student conflicts or students with elevated social emotional needs in the classrooms. And so there's this constant, you know, conversation about how best we support students. And as two of the people leading in that work, administrator and school counselor, how can we look at what the current state of whatever issue it is, what that desired state is, and what kind of tools, resources, conversations do we need to have within the school to wrap around that child and really target their mental health and their overall wellness, which of course will impact their academics and, you know, all of their kind of their life.
Now, I should ask you this at the beginning. What level are you on? Are you middle school, high school, high?
I was an administrator for almost a full, well, about a half year at the middle school level. All of my teaching career was in middle and high school and college. And my current administrative role, I've been 4 years in K to five, I have pre-K as well as a comprehensive autism preschool program. I have Head Start, and then I have K to five in English, and I have a K to five French immersion program in my school.
Okay, so you're getting the babies where they need a whole lot of attention and detachment issues, and as far as that part. Now with counseling, how do you see them as far as using them for your school improvement plans or setting up goals or closing gaps in your building?
So in terms of school improvement, I think they're a critical portion of the work, just in terms of the overall conversation about the trajectory of school. You know, if you look at, you know, academic performance, while they're not directly involved in the teaching piece of, you know, the academics in schools, they're still directly tied into students' lives. And if we look at student origins, or like the book Street Data, you know, talks about really looking at the street data level up and really trying to capture the whole life, the whole story of a child, then the counselors, you know, counselors need to really be plugged into those stories to know where a child's coming from, to know where they're going to. So those conversations around academics, around interventions that are taking place, I think are good for a counselor to be part of. So, you know, if a student's struggling, they're performing, you know, below standards, they're not meeting, you know, certain benchmarks, et cetera, there's always a why for it. I mean, children come to school hungry to learn, excited to have a good time, in love with a lot of things about school, especially at this age. I think as they get a little older, unfortunately, sometimes it's taught out of them for a variety of different reasons. But at these early levels, you know, teachers and counselors are working really around those stories to look at impact and how they can, you know, shape and empower, you know, these young children. And so also with regards to our equity work around anti-racism, LGBTQ plus issues around overall implicit bias and overall equality and kind of educational abolitionist perspectives in work, especially around communities of color and indigenous communities, bringing your counselor into those conversations, I think is critical as we look at, you know, societal damage that's been done, systemic issues and critical race theory related issues around how those communities have been impacted and marginalized, and what kind of repair work needs to be done in different communities, how it can be aligned with school improvement. Schools can't improve, in my personal opinion, unless everyone's free. You know, schools can't be improved unless there's a clear line between administration, counselors, teachers, and all other staff working in a building that the mindset and the behavior of that school have to be about liberation. And that has to involve every child's life from every race, culture, demographic, you know, gender. It has to target all of those things. School counselors, in terms of their messaging, their programming, the SEL lessons they're doing in classes, their triage work they're doing during this pandemic and ultimately post-pandemic, the work they do with administration around behavior intervention and strategic supports, is also critical to that school improvement plan and really draws them in as a critical member of that kind of task force to accomplish those things. So I see them as a very integral part and a very needed part throughout the process, you know, operationally for school improvement.
Now, I know a lot of, I don't know about your bill, but I know some schools, some districts have their counselors on their team as far as the improvement team or their leadership team. How important is it for them to have, for schools to have counselors on their leadership team to help develop these plans? I mean, I know you answer everything with the interventions, but I would think it's very important to make sure that you have, if you're an elementary, so you most likely have one counselor. Do you have your entire, how integral is it to have your counselors on your leadership team?
Well, I think it's a wonderful question. And I think the answer to me is a very simple one. There can't be any other choice have more on your representation team to those various levels. That might mean your core team, you know, which are the highest, I guess, kind of leadership roles in the school, principal, assistant principal, coordinator, staff development, reading specialist, math specialist, those roles, and counselor, followed by leadership team, all the grade level team leaders and counselor, followed by the counselor also involved in leading the work on restorative justice team or PBIS team, if schools have that. So they're involved kind of at the top of that hierarchical, you know, pyramid on a variety of different leading levels, not only so they can be seen, you know, perception wise by the entire school, is someone who's about leading and affecting change on a heavy social emotional level, but also on the ground level, seen across the school and throughout the school by all students as a person who's really plugged into all the pieces of the school, not just showing of their work, but the deeper that they're plugged into the school, the more effective I think they are in doing their job, because they understand the pulse of the school then as well. And so I think they have to be on those teams and they have to be part of a consistent branding from the school around the critical role of a school counselor. And they have to be around that consistent messaging that's being framed and shared with the community at large about mental health, about wellness, mindfulness, social emotional work in the school, you know, equity, like I mentioned, restorative justice. They're a part of all of those. And those are all critical topics in a school. And so they need to be really helping to guide and inform that work.
I think I got one more question for before we get you off the line. What is the one thing in your building that is your counselors are the most needed as far as you said triage earlier? What form of triage is the most, I would say, catered to in your building?
So to kind of go with the metaphor a little bit of like this pandemic time is almost kind of like a dark forest. And, you know, so many of our children have been, I guess, kind of lost in that forest, hoping to find their way, wanting to find their way, but not really sure of the path, and have stumbled off somewhere into the tall trees, into the dark canopy. And they're just kind of have been lost through this whole, especially at my K-1, you know, children who missed school, who never had those opportunities and now are in school being asked to socialize in large groups to find their way in English or in French in our school, language-wise, who are, you know, coming to it from their own homes and trying to find their way through all of this. They come in just seeming, you know, in the face of all of this lost. And so we have really begun like, you know, a recovery attempt in terms of triage about taking them gently, bringing them in. There's a lot of tears, a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, a lot of worry, anxiety. We're seeing it manifest in all kinds of ways, but that like recovering them from the woods, bringing them out of that dark place that they seem to have, you know, gone through and were affected by, and trying to help them get grounded again, knowing that this is a physically and psychologically safe place for them. They're going to be treated fairly and most importantly with love here. And we're going to get them set back on a new course that is different from what they were in before, trying to kind of quote unquote do school and virtual, which was so challenging and confusing, but get them in this space where they're going to be protected. We're going to help them find, you know, a new path through all of this kind of next chapter of COVID. You know, we've got the pandemics of race and the pandemics of COVID that still surround us. And so just trying to help them in this recovery portion to begin to move forward as healthily, as gently and as lovingly as possible.
Yeah, just give me a small little plug for your book, Heart Leader. It's coming out later on this year from Codebreaker Incorporated. You discussed that a little bit.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I want to thank Brian Aspinall and Daphne McMenemy over at Codebreaker for giving me this chance. But yes, absolutely. My book's going to be coming out later this fall. It's called Heart Leader, and its focus is love leading, what it means to be a heart leader. It's a field guide for K-12 educators who are leaders, who are interested in leadership, who are in the trenches every day looking for the most effective ways to safeguard and guide children forward from a love lens. So it's all about equity, social emotional work, leadership work, restorative justice practices, all from a place of leading from the heart and letting love guide the work, letting love inform instructional coaching, letting love really kind of shape how a leader or an aspiring leader can build a community in a school system. And so it's part memoir and follows my origin stories and then cover stories from a lot of different educators and colleagues, and then a lot of actionable strategies and ideas for what it means to heart lead, how it's defined, how to understand your own emotional aperture, I call it, and then how to operationalize those things in the world of education in order to really make it known that, you know, every day it's all about the love.
Mr. Bowerman, I want to thank you for taking time out to talk with me on a Friday of all days. I appreciate you, man.
No, baby, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been a pleasure to collaborate with you. I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
No problem. We've got more Council Connection. My housekeeping items, my final thought after this.
This is the part of the show where we do our housekeeping, y'all. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at Fabe the PSC. That is FAB as in boy E, the PSC. Of course, you can follow the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Overcast, and of course, Apple Podcasts. We're looking for also for sponsors for the show. You know, we're doing school counseling things, and you know, we'll give you a shout out if you want to do a sponsorship with me, and you know, try to build up our base. We're doing this podcast for a couple of years, and we love your support, especially from Apple, because I love Apple products. I have a lot of Apple things, and with my upgrading to an Apple MacBook or, you know, a newer iPad, of course, or, you know, different things, you know, Nike, Aldo shoes, you know, something like that. You can also follow my webpage, fadethecounselor.weebly.com. I need to update a little bit. Have an update in a little while. I use it as a digital portfolio as well, and do a small little mini blog on there as well. Of course, look out for the GSCA podcast. First episode should air soon. Once we finish a little bit editing on that should be rocking and rolling. We're going to have a lot of special guests on that show. We'll be happy for it. Also, if you go to anchor.fm/Fabian-Vix or Fabian-Vix, if you click on our anchor page, you can click the messages link. You can leave us a voice message and we will air it. We've been trying to push this for 3 years. Nobody has used it yet. We love your feedback or things you want to talk about. We'll put your questions on the air and we'll be more than happy to answer those questions, good or bad. Also, always looking for administrators to come on the show. New counselors this year, especially during you get hired and it's your first year counseling, but we're in a pandemic. We love to see how you're doing and how you're holding up and everything. We just want to chat with you on the things that you're doing. Experienced counselor, we want to see what you're doing, what works in your building, and how are you handling this year with students being back in the building 100% of the time. Also, don't forget the counselor we interviewed back in August. We're going to check up with them, check on with them and see how they're doing and see how the progress from the first part of the show to the beginning of the year and see how their year ended up. Make sure that they haven't pulled their hair out or, you know, we want to make sure they're okay because this is a great job to have. It's just circumstances that's making it a little bit more difficult this year because of the pandemic. And we want to make sure that we as counselors are supporting each other to make sure that we are all successful. Now, we're going to get to my final thoughts after this. Faye's final thought. So, I haven't recorded in about a month. Been a lot busier this year, despite, contrary to popular belief. I want to talk about a slight form of self-care. As some of you do know, I do play saxophone. Before I go any further, let me preface this conversation with the conversation I had with a good friend of mine, John Nwosu. He is in Georgia, Cobb County, and we were both on the leadership, began a leadership team together in 2019. If I remember correctly, I think it's 2019. And we went to our state's state LDI Leadership Development Institute that year, and we were roommates. And you know, just have a small little conversation about you know, things we do in our building. And I talked about how I play saxophone. You thought about doing music therapy. Like, no, I haven't thought about it. I have thought about how I use, you know, why I do small groups and why I did a career class. I have, when they're doing work, I play some. I had took some requests for them to play, make sure it was clean or whatever. Just play the music while they're doing the work in the class or whatever. And you know, and in the morning I have a playlist for kids coming down from where I was in duty in the hallway. My office is right there at the entrance of the separate building at Appling. And I had a small little speaker and my iPad connected to the speaker. I had some music playing. I had a mixture of some, at the time, current songs and some old school stuff like Earth, Wind & Fire, Gap Band, so forth and so on. Some stuff that, you know, some different music playing through the office while I'm on duty, so that way they could come in a little calm that morning. And I didn't think nothing of it. I was, you know, just something minor to have, you know, set the mood for school. You know, you have different areas, different times you want to set the mood for different things. I'm gonna let you decipher that meaning of that. But a couple of years later, of course, I switched schools. I'm in Henry County, and our social worker and I, we were just talking about, we need to have some type of self-care with some music. We talked about, yeah, we need to do it. Me being the person I am, I'm a traditionalist. I'll play on tracks or whatever, but I prefer a live band with a keyboard player and a drummer, maybe a bass player if you could get one. Something live, so that way you get a more authentic feeling of the music, a more authentic expression of playing. That's why if at all possible, when I do gigs, if it's a band setting, I prefer to be with a band, so that way you can groove together and mesh and express musically your thoughts with their thoughts, and combining those together, you get an integration of beauty. And I love music. I love playing saxophone. I've been playing for 32, 33 years. I love music. A lot of, that's supposed to, I wish I could have went professional, but that's just once in a lifetime. And things, you know, there's always that small percentage of people that are so special that can do it for a living, and I commend those people. And I've met a few people across my travels as far as on this earth. And one person that I loved that I met was Angela Christie, a gospel artist. I met her twice. I went to a concert with Byron Cage, and she was like a lead in to him, and got to meet her at the end, and took a picture with her. This was about 13 years ago. Now, if you go from 2008 to 2010, one of the churches I used to play at, she was a good friend with one of the assistant ministers there, and I think she did public relations for her, and she got her to play at our church. And she wanted to she had tracks that she played on, then she might have us help with one of her songs. And while we rehearsed with her that morning, everybody had a couple friends that play horn that was sitting in with us, because you know they were sitting in once or twice, you know, every month or two, and play. So she looked at me like, "Oh, you play soprano? Oh, you soloing on this song?" I'm like, "What?" So we didn't tell nobody in the church. Nobody knew I was playing on one of her songs. So. And I was nervous because she was there, and I was joking everybody, "Hey, she keep the fire me, and she been taking my spot, y'all." And I know she ain't. So when it came time to play one of her songs, I think it was her cover of I think it was Glory Glory. And I actually thought I was gonna play it on her. I think I had an 8-16 bar solo. The folks realized it was me playing that they were crazy and everything. That I actually got a chance to play with her, and for that I am appreciative for that, now we go forward to now, the present day, 2021, our social worker, Ms. Khan, me and her were discussing while we were lunch duty or whatever, just talking about, hey, we need some live music. So I suggested to my principal, Mr. Wilder, hey, can we do some live music? Go for it. Do it. Let's get it done. So we talked about it like for a week or two, a couple weeks, just trying to figure out when to do it. So last week, I brought all my stuff down. Of course, I didn't have a band, so I had some tracks that I already knew. So practice time for me is condensed because of school, and I get home late. And that's for one, anybody plays an instrument out there, or any kids or young adults or adults that's out there, you got to find time. Even if it's 20 minutes a day working on an A2 book or a method book, to get some practice in, just to, you know, build tone and build form and structure in your own lines that you play. Just take that time out. So brought my stuff in, hooked it up. They're like, what's going on? So I brought out a song, with Boot Up. So Boot Up, one song, that's a popular song. So you're talking about, so I played through all three grade levels lunches. So that way, you know, everybody get up, it'll be equitable for each grade level. So, well, I mean, so I'm 8th grade counselor, so when you heard those 8th graders in there, it just brought, you know, a smile on my face that the kids were engaged, and it was something different in the mood. They was enjoying it. I'm surprised they would like live music. Plus the fact that a lot of them didn't know I play saxophone. And a good bit of the kids that were there were of course in band. So they didn't realize that I could play sax and I could play, and I took time out my day to give something for them. I think it was more for the teachers, to be honest with you, because the teachers were partying and dancing and everything. And I say all this to say, for self-care, it's not just about our self-care. Also, we got to find little ways to bring self-care to our staff and our faculty and our kids and our support staff or whatnot. And the things that they've said that was so kind of them, that I needed this more than the kids, and the kids needed this. They say, I needed that today. One of the teachers, Ms. Culver, said, one of the kids said, I needed this. And one of the teachers had a tough week where a friend of hers, son, I believe, committed suicide, and trying to help plan for their next steps and whatnot. She said, the week I've had, just by you coming in there, just playing, put a smile on my face. A couple of teachers tweeted, and I retweeted and shared it, and I put it on Facebook and the Twitter. Folks don't realize what anybody's going through, and just by a little show of kindness can go a long way in making somebody's day better or their week better, possibly their year. And we need to be mindful of making sure that we are in tune with our staff, our kids, everybody, so that way we are available to make sure that we give them what they need in conventional and in unconventional ways. Now, of course, now we have started something. Now the teachers are going to expect this now. So, which means, go back to my practicing. I need to start picking my game up and practicing a little bit more and adding some different songs to my repertoire. And when I do gigs on the side, I have a set list of songs that I do that I can go ahead and have them play if I need to do a quick gig. If I got something for you for Friday, I have a set to go. I could just refresh over those songs, and I could go and sound good, be professional and everything. But that shouldn't be the norm, though, for any of us. Now, we turn this to counselor. We need to make sure that we're prepared every day for our students, that we have our lesson plans ready to go. We have our core curriculum. We have interventions ready to go. We have our check-in, check-out ready to go. We need to make sure everything that we do is in line to making sure that everybody in our building is successful. So with that being said, I know it's, for me right now, I'm recording on a Sunday at 8:17. Now I'm actually excited about practicing. Actually excited about putting time into my craft, more time into my craft than what I've already put in. Because something that you all don't know, this is the time of the year I get ready to do my Christmas concert. I've been doing it for the last 11 years. And I know my Saturdays from September to December are are Pat rehearsing, practicing, getting things right, and tweaking, modifying, make sure it's pleasing for everybody. And I don't know, I'm not trying to throw religion on anybody like that, but you know, just I believe in a higher being, a God or whatnot. So when I play, especially at church, I want to make sure I give my best offering to Him, and I want to make sure that it's pleasing to His ears. Make sure that it touches, even just touch one person. That's my job. I'm done. I'm good. Because it's not about touching every single body. Because everybody's not gonna like what you do, but if you got that one person that say you changed my day and made my week better, or even a student said, I need that today, you did your job. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. I want to thank Mr. Bowerman for taking time out of his schedule, for jumping on the interview, and I'm out.